I am Planta on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Dr. Dave Hepburn is a popular award-winning syndicated columnist. We read him here weekly in the province. He's just written a hilarious and very useful book, The Doctor is Insane, Indispensable Advice from Dr. Dave. There's a lot of practical information on everyday as well as chronic health conditions. He is also the host of Wise Quacks on the Chorus Radio Network. This book is published by Greystone. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Dr. Dave Hepburn. Good morning, Dr. Hepburn.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
This career in writing, when did this all begin?
Well, it began as I used to live in a little country called Vanuatu in the jungles of Vanuatu in an island called Tana, which is a very primitive island with very few facilities at all, no electricity, for example. And CBC caught wind of this and asked me if I would write some reports about what it was like to live and practice and in this jungle environment. So that's what started it, and I guess the ball just kept rolling from there.
And this column, when did this begin?
Well, I think it began after I returned from Vanuatu, and I had a local newspaper that asked me if I would just write a column on something. I said only if I could do it in my way, and they said fine. And so I started with just a local little weekly column, and it just kind of blew up from there. I was getting phone calls from other weeklies, and then finally someone said, "Hey, you can get paid for this." And so that was even an interesting bonus I didn't expect. But it was it's fun. It's meant to entertain myself, and if others go along for the ride, I say so be it.
And had you written all along, like when you were younger?
No, I am not a writer at all. I have a hard time even writing my name without making a lot of grammatical errors. And so what happens, though, fortunately, my daughter is, I'm sure she wonders who her real father is when she looked at my stuff, because she has an English degree. And so she would look at this copy I would do, and she would just take a red pencil to it and look like a Valentine's Day massacre by the time she was done. I'm sure she would have had her genetic testing done after that to see who it really was. But, you know, being grammatically correct and being an English major is not something most physicians spend a lot of time worrying about. You know, we typically write so people can't read. So anyway, it was just but it's evolved over time. Editors have shown me how to not do this and do this and what I can get away with. But fortunately for us is that medicine tells its own stories, and I just sort of put it together.
Have you got messy writing?
I can't read my own.
Really?
I look at my notes sometimes and go, what was I thinking there? I don't know. I try and go back and try to figure out what I was trying to write there. So I need that electronic medical records for sure.
How did you end up in Vanuatu?
Well, there's a group of doctors in Victoria who, again, have nothing in common other than the fact that we live in Victoria and we're GPs, who have discovered this island called Tana, and we have undertaken the care of this island since 1991. We go there. There's probably roughly 30,000 people, and we are, for the most part, the only Caucasian on the island when we're there, and it's a Michener-esque, beautiful South Pacific type of an island, and yet it's very primitive. It's a great place to go and find out who you are, what you're made of, and what you can do under the most extreme circumstances.
So you still go there from time to time, do you?
Well, it's believe it or not, most doctors have only been there once, because we have so many doctors that want to go. So we've actually, I've only been there the one time, but it was a wonderful time in my life.
So the practice in Victoria, that's your day job, I guess, your full-time job, is it?
Yeah, I do a practice in Victoria 3 days a week now.
Amongst the patients that you see in your office, in these times that we're in, this economic downturn, do you see a lot of anxiety?
Yes, there's no shortage of anxiety, and it's and it's big sister depression. We see a lot. That's probably in the top 10 list of what we see in the doctor's office this day and age.
And I guess there may be some people listening to us who feel down. If they go to you, or if they go to their general practitioner,
mm-hmm.
can they be? I hate to use the word cured, but can they seek help from you, or do you have to send them off to someone else, like a psychiatrist or something?
Well, no, you wouldn't just send anxiety to a psychiatrist, because they would just be so busy with that. But no, we deal with it ourselves as GPs, and of course. That's the art of medicine, is that you have every physician has their own way of dealing with things. Often this requires medical intervention combined with some counseling, combined with changing things in their life that may be causing it. And one thing I've noticed is that, you know, once I've identified, if I've identified the cause of anxiety, I will do everything I can to remove that individual from that source. And I often say things like, if you never had to step into that building again, how would you feel? And you can just see the relief is palpable in their face and their thoughts. And they say, well, you know what? You live once. Why would you spend it doing something that you don't like to do, for example? Obviously, workplace stress being a major cause of anxiety. And it's just a matter sometimes of being able to take over and helping them understand that, you know, they are not in a rut of life. They do not have to live that life that way and in one day wake up wondering where it all went when their dreams were such and such and they ended up doing something completely different that they didn't like. Life is too short, and when, as a physician, you have the opportunity to see, to take inventory in people in different phases of life, different ages of life, and you can, if you're at all insightful, be able to realize that, hey, this is what you, this is what's going to lead you into problems in the future, and so I've used that template for myself, and I will also use it for patients as well, helping them.
Do you see a lot of patients that come to you wanting to live longer?
Wanting to live, as the phrase I like to use is that wouldn't it be great if we all died young at an old age? So, I mean, yes, people, obviously the quantity and quality of life is important in people's, that's why they come to a doctor in the first place, is they hopefully can, hopefully that little nagging, mole or something that they've had there is not going to be the end of their life. And so that's what we try and do, is we try and prevent and predict and help from there.
Well, what I enjoyed about the book, and it's very funny, that it's not put together like an encyclopedia. So you actually have to read the book. You can't just pick it up. Well, you can pick it up in places and read it.
Right.
Was that your goal, to make it more of a narrative?
You know, it's a compilation of columns, obviously, and that I've written for newspapers. It's just to make it more readable, because, you know, I've read some of the stuff that's out there, and I have a hard time reading some of these the health books or columns or whatever, because I find them boring, and I think you learn more if you're enjoying what you're reading, and so I write it for myself, and as I say, if others go along for the ride, that's great, and they do. It tends to be I think a better format for presenting anything is to have some laughs. And so the book will make you laugh, and it'll make you cry as well. There's some, it's medicine is poignant, and it's full of different things that really make you step back and think, and that's what the book reflects. At the same time, the book is a health book, and it's informative. By reading it, I think people will be much better informed about how to deal with day-to-day issues that they could face or they do face.
Well, one of the things that I've, reading the book, I found interesting is because I suffer from this, and I noticed this a couple months ago, is that my ears get really itchy.
Right.
And I looked it up online, and I figured out that I use cotton swabs a great deal.
Right.
I use them probably 2-3 times a day. I shouldn't do that, should I?
Bad dog. No, right. We would smack your hands, and we would break your cotton swabs. And as the old saying goes, nothing smaller than your elbow goes into your ear. And that's the way it should be, because these little cotton swabs are little weapons that we as physicians do not like. People have this sort of an innate desire, it seems, to want to tear any wax out of their ears, thinking it's something bad. But in fact, that's a myth. Wax is put there by Mother Nature to protect our ear canals. And we often see people come into the office with itchy ear canals or painful swollen canals because they put the Q-tip in there and they've turned it, and it's... What it does is it not only removes the protective wax, but it also will create these small little cracks and fissures in the canal, which in turn get infected. We call it Q-tip ear. And, we have a campaign on to remove all Q-tips. I mean, the only reason I use a Q-tip is for my mascara. That's all I use it for. I do not put it in my ear.
So what do I do about the itchiness?
Well, at this phase, I mean, there are drops that you can use, but it's one of those things is that if you stop scratching it, it'll stop itching. So, and that's true of a lot of itchiness, is that a lot of it is basically when you scratch or rub skin, you release histamine and another substance called SRS, which is very itch-provoking. So people just continue to scratch whatever itches, and it gets worse and worse. And so part of the beast is to try and prevent that in the first place. And if you can go so long without scratching it or rubbing it, then the itch will die down. But the reason it's probably itchy is probably because you have a bit of some micro infections and micro fissures in your canal, and you should probably get some drops, but do not put Q-tips in there.
So I guess it's all about discipline, isn't it?
Discipline, yes, absolutely. Self-discipline is a lot of what we do in medicine.
The common cold, is there a cure for that, have you found?
Joe, I don't know the common cure for the common cold. There is one in the works, however. Believe it or not, this is just in the last month or so. It looks like that they're on the cusp of being able to find a cure for the common cold.
Yeah.
But no, nothing works for the cold. And so patients come into the office and they have a cold. And they look at you as if you're the only doctor in the world that has found a cure for it. And what are you going to do to cure my cold? Doctor, I have a cold, but I can't have one. I have to be ready for such and such. And it's like, well, you know, if you come into the office, all you're going to do is, you know, there's nothing we can do for you. And so I tell patients with colds, don't go to see your doctor, because then you come into my office, and then I catch the cold from you, and then I have to go see my doctor. So it's not something that we encourage you to go and do. There's nothing we can do for you. You know, when something better than chicken soup comes along, we'll let you know.
I just thought of something. You have your own doctor. Is that something that they tell you not to do in medical school, to practice on yourself?
Yeah, they say a physician who has uses himself as a doctor is a fool for both the patient and the doctor.
And your kids, do they go elsewhere? Or?
How about kids? I think you're probably tired of coming to me for advice because I think it's, you know, actually, no, my sons are hockey players, and so I when they get their face torn up and stuff, they come to me to sew them up, and I do that. They come to me first, and I'm somewhat pleased about that, thank goodness.
This may seem like a stupid question, but are you a better patient when you go to the doctor than, say, someone that doesn't have this background that you have?
Or worse, I mean, because I can picture everything. That's the thing. I mean, in medical school, when you're going through medicine and when they teach you certain principles, when they were teaching us, for example, about lymph nodes, everybody's in there and they're feeling their lymph nodes, thinking they all have lymphoma, leukemia. So that's sort of knowing too much. As you learn these things, you think, well, maybe I have that. The prostate lectures were not a pretty sight in my medical school because everyone's checking to see if they've got, you know, prostate cancer, testicular cancer, and you just about catch these things. I mean, in gynecology, where all the guys were, you know, eating dill pickle ice creams and waiting for the water to break just about, because it's easy to pick these up and know too much about things, and you wonder. But I don't know if it makes me a better patient or more neurotic. I'm not sure.
Have you found the internet useful in terms of? Is it useful? I mean, people come into your office; they've already self-diagnosed themselves off the internet.
Yeah, they come in with a diagnosis of Eastern Bohemian rare pseudohypoparathyroidism as being the cause of their sneezing when it's just a cold, and so that happens. And there is a big. The internet cannot give you the experience that experienced physicians can do. So patients will come in, and I don't mind that a bit. I'm actually glad that it's there, that they use it. And in fact, we'll use it as a resource. I will say, listen, here's the condition you have. I want you to go and learn about irritable bowel syndrome, and you can do this on these websites. So I've turned it around and used it as a great teaching technique and tool, as long as they use the right ones. And then they come back informed, and I think they come back and go, wow, doctor, you were right, that is me, or that is what's been helpful. And I say, great, all I did was give you a website.
Well, one of the, I read your call, whenever your column's in the province, I read that, and I've enjoyed it for many, many years now. One of the things I've enjoyed about the book as well is that you seem to be hip to pop culture and the sort, but I read in the book that you don't have a TV. Is that true?
Well, that was as a result of living in the jungles where we didn't have a TV, and so came back from Vanuatu and thought, you know what, we don't need this. And I've since, I have a TV now, but I just sort of, it's for the playoffs, and as I am a hockey nut, I'm afraid, but irrespective, I mean, it is I think people spend way too much time in front of a television set. I mean, the average Canadian is 28 hours in front of a set, and then they wonder why they're depressed and why they're sedentary and why they're getting all the diseases associated with it. So I think we'd be better off without televisions, or at least being able to restrict our again, back to discipline, our watching, the amount of time we spend watching TV and glued to it, and when our brains go into a non-learning alpha rhythms And so I've become, yeah, I realize that that is one of the three big things in our society that has led to a lot of our current problems, is television screens, or computer screens sometimes, fast foods, and then the automobile have all contributed to why we've become such a sedentary society and looking constantly for entertainment and not necessarily out there trying to better themselves and others.
Do you watch doctor shows on TV at all?
No, not really. Not really. Which one are you referring to?
Well, the House, Grey's Anatomy, ER.
I've never watched Grey's Anatomy or ER, but I have watched a couple of the House episodes, and I quite find them entertaining because I'm trying to guess what the patient has before he does.
Yeah,
that's a challenge more than anything else.
Do people, when they come to see you, do you see a lot of this nowadays where people come to you sort of proactively, that they want to quit smoking, and they'll come to you and seek advice on something like that?
Yeah, I think that's information. The information world has made people say, hey, listen, you know, I'm not going to wait until the doctor asks me if I have erectile dysfunction or if I need to quit smoking. I'm going to go and ask him specifically, hey, what have you got to help me with this and that and the other? And hopefully, again, as you know, British Columbia leads the nation in smoking cessation rates, and we're down to 15% in BC, which is great, well below the national average. And so, again, it's people taking the incentive to want to prevent diseases. And, you know, you can lead a horse to water here, and if they come saying, hey, listen, I smoke, I want to quit, great. You know, we're ready to help that way. And so, it's always encouraging when patients do that.
I chew a lot of gum. Does that cause gas?
You know, actually, it can because it induces some aerophagia, some swallowing. But, you know, it's interesting, little tidbits that will mean nothing to you, but post-operatively, one of the problems after surgeries is that patients' gastrointestinal system shut down. And as such, you know, we wait until they pass gas as a good sign. And now what we can do is post-operatively just give them some gum to chew, and it'll get their bowels going again, and post-operatively, so what does that tell you? Lots.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It can. I mean, it depends how you chew as well.
And snoring, is that bad for you?
Snoring itself isn't bad for you unless, you know, your wife happens to have a knife in the drawer beside you. But it is, I would suggest that snoring can sometimes be an indication of one of the symptoms of sleep apnea, which can be very destructive.
You tell a story in the book, and this is one of the places in the book where we our eyes get wet. Holly, she was she worked in your office, did she?
She did, and that was that's a true story, and that is you know, a phone call you'd never want to take, and I had to take that phone call, and it was obviously, you know, crushing time, and yet so I wanted to give that somewhat of a legacy and allow that to go on forever with her. You know, that's, you know, and there are a lot of Hollies out there. There are a lot of stories like that. And so I just wanted to make sure that was what people understood, is that this is how she was, and this is how we should, these are the lessons we need to take from that.
So she was the medical office assistant.
Yes, she was.
That's the person that you see when you come into the office,
that's
right?
That's what they're called in British Columbia, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you seem to write that she was smarter than you in terms of diagnoses and things like that. Is that true?
She was just so excited about what she did. And she had such a great way with people, and she could have easily been smarter than me with some education, which she was heading towards to do at the University of Alberta. But when that happened, you know, it's great to see people with that sort of juice to want to learn and be creative and constantly curious about what's happening. And she was wonderful that way. She was informative, and she was very personable.
And we have to be nicer to them. That's what you contend, right?
That's right. We have to. You never know. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of people who have regrets because they didn't do this or they didn't do that or they weren't this way until it's too late.
This is a wonderful book. Congratulations on it, and continued good luck with it, Dr. Hepburn.
Thank you very much, Joe.
The book is called The Doctor Is Insane, Indispensable Advice from Dr. Dave. Greystone Books is its publisher. Wisequacks, you can listen to that on the Chorus Network. Dr. Dave Hepburn online. I'm Joseph Plata.